Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and if you're a regular listener, you know how much I have a passion for reading. From as far back as I can remember, books were a joy of my life. They are obviously today still the same. I mean, you can't sit down and be engrossed in 400 to 600 books a year and not have a passion for reading. And one of the gifts that reading gives you is a greater world. It enables you to just travel to all kinds of places, become aware of different cultures, different belief systems. My guest today, PJ Nichols is her name, has developed a series of children's books. We're going to be talking about three of them today. Each of them are very unique. Now, for those of you that have nieces, nephews, your own children, maybe you're a teacher, and you're always looking for material that you can bring in to the younger generation to get them excited about reading. A good reader usually ends up being a successful person in life because their world is not a small one, and they're able to cope with all of the variables of life much better. That's been demonstrated by research so many times. PJ Nichols, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate that.
PJ, you came out with a children's book, and we had you on the air back around the holidays in 2008. You had Stanley the Christmas Tree. But you've been one busy beaver since then because you've published some other books that I think are really quite exceptional. I want to let people know a little bit about you because you were formerly an elementary school principal. You also were a consultant for the Colorado Department of Education. You taught Spanish and English as a second language. And you decided you wanted to develop these books to assist teachers to encourage students to read. And there's three of them that I have in front of me. One's Lewis the Lemur and His Adventures. This first one is called The Belly of the Beast. The other one that we're going to be talking about is Nuni of Nunivak Island. And then the third one we're going to talk about is Vultures in the Cemetery. Now, for kids, these titles, especially Vultures in the Cemetery, I mean, any kid would grab onto that one. They just say, ooh, cool. You know, I want to find out about those creepy things there, the vultures. Now, I want people also to know that you have a double master's degree in linguistics and English as a second language, and you're completing your doctorate of Christian education, but you've been a member of the Adams State College President's Honor Society. You've been an adjunct professor in the ASC Education Department. You really have a passion for learning, and you have a motto where it's, if education's done right, all children will learn. And, of course, we won't go into the attitudes about education at this time because so many people have different positionings on it. But with a person like yourself, education is so significant. Why do you think you have this absolute love of teaching?
Well, I think because I've seen how it can change children's lives. I was a child who could not read, so being that I could not read myself, and they didn't find out until I was in the fourth grade, education became horrible for me. The whole educational process was just nothing but a nightmare, and I didn't want that for other children. I have six children of my own, and I have several of my children are now adults, and they are not literate. They can read, but they read approximately a third or fourth grade level. So I do have a passion for this. And when I began teaching school, I realized that if I would teach in very different ways, the children would become fascinated about certain subjects, and then it was a very good segue for me to take books, have them come alive, and then go right into science, history, geography, social mm-hmm. studies. Mm-hmm. So when I began writing these books, I wanted children to know about places in the world that they probably are not readily exposed to. I wanted them to know about endangered animals, and in the case of Nuni of Nunavak Island, which, by the way, tomorrow morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, we are leaving Seattle, where my mother and I are right now, and we are taking a plane and then a tinier plane and a tinier plane, and we are flying to Nunavak to present all the children in that little village school. There's about 40 children in the school. They will all get sets of all of these books because they are from an impoverished school district, and, well, maybe not school district, but school for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to know that somebody is actually writing about them, because very few, if any, people that I've talked to have said, oh, yeah, I know about Nunavak Island.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want children to do is these books, I call them textbooks in disguise, because when you look at them, they look like they could be children's picture books, but they're more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
And that has confused a few reviewers, because they want them to be children's picture books, but they're not. They're children's textbooks with a story, with a plot, with life lessons, with teachable moments, with loads of science, geography, and didactic text. But they have pictures.
Mm-hmm.
To support the text. So this helps low-level readers. It helps autistic children. It makes it fun for readers who don't struggle with reading. Kids don't complain that there's some pictures in the books. They like that. And the animals are very realistic. They're not cartoony. Their bodies are, my artists draw them so that they are anatomically correct, if you will. And the vultures look like vultures, although they look, you know, they're well, I think they're cute. I've had people tell me they're horrible, but that's, of course, the point of the story, is what the chipmunk thinks about the vultures in the cemetery and how that unfolds.
Right.
But these books also have lesson guides that go with them that are aligned to the national standards of education. And they are aligned in social studies, history, geography, language arts. They have writing prompts. They have activities. And these, it will work as enhancements in the classroom and also for homeschool parents. So you can take a curriculum you're working with, and you don't have to kill yourself off trying to reinvent the wheel. You can just plug these in, so you could use them in a guided reading circle. The other thing that we do is we create audiobooks. Every single book has audiobooks narrated by a lovely, lovely narrator, voiceover artist in England. And he narrates all my books. He's fabulous. He just brings the creatures alive with the voices. And then we have a composer who writes music. So there's actually music, songs that kids can learn on the audiobooks. So the things are sold separately, so anyone could buy a book without an audiobook, although we do recommend the audiobooks because the kids have so much fun with them. They're great for English as a second language learners because they can learn English, see the words, hear the pronunciations. Great for autistic children because the music engages autistic and many special needs children. So I've tried to take a look at what the diverse classroom looks like, what a home looks like for homeschool parents with different age groups, and we've built all of that into the actual product. So they look like fun children's books, but they are filled with learning.
Now, let's start off with Nuni. You mentioned Nuni going up to the school tomorrow and
mm-hmm.
flying up there, and that's Nuni, Alaska, I believe. Am I correct? It's in Alaska?
Right. Nunavak Island is directly west of, it's not a part of the Aleutians, it is west of Bethel. So anyone who's interested could take a look at the map of Alaska and find Bethel, and you will see Nunavak Island off of the mainland there. There is only one village. It's a very large, large island, but there's only one village, and there's approximately 150 people that are still living there. And they are an endangered group of people. We have many groups of people in the world who are now endangered. Their language, their culture, you know, the world is encroaching upon them as we encroach upon endangered animals as well. So, mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things about the book, Nooni, the Nooni series, this is the first one of the series, is that you actually are putting the Cupid language, and correct me if I didn't pronounce it correctly, but you've actually put their words in the book, and I would imagine that when the teachers there are communicating with their students, that's going to have quite a significant impact on them because there is their language that has been put into written form, and perhaps they will be able to preserve that. How did you become acquainted with this island and the language of its people in this small village of 150?
I began doing some research. My intention was to write about the Inuit people. And because of my passion for linguistics, being my major and that sort of thing, I started looking for an Inuit dictionary, and in my search of looking for Inuit words, I came upon a dictionary, and I don't say the word exactly right either because it's a difficult language, but I fell across the Quick Dictionary. So I got a hold of the webmaster who takes care of the Nunavak of Nunavak Island website in Anchorage, and I said, is there anyone you could get me in touch with so that they could work as a liaison with me? I would like to see about writing a book about this fascinating island, this language, and these people. So 2.5 years, almost 3 years ago now, a woman named Muriel Amos became the person that I started talking with. She and her husband are diligently working in keeping their culture alive, and she was delighted, so she helped me get the words in the proper tense, and I had other publishing companies and other people say, you can't write a book like that. It's just, you can't do that because I have the English word and then in italics in a different color, of course, we have the Kupik word, so you can read through the whole book, as you know, you mm-hmm. read through the whole book without using the Kupik word.
Right.
You can see the word. But in the audio book, believe it or not, Paul McKenzie is the most gifted narrator I've ever met. This man rehearsed for almost 3 months. Muriel made a voice MP3 for us. We got that over to England, and he worked for 3 months until he could perfectly read the book, inserting the Kupik language in it. And it is incredible. So I told him he's the only Brit, I'm sure that we can safely say he's the only Brit who can speak some Kupik. And he's phenomenal. So then the children can go through, and I say it's because he can speak Welsh, that helped him, believe it or not. It's very guttural, like Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
He said that... what I mean to say is that you can take the audio book then, and the children, he's recorded it in two, completely in English and then one with the Kupik. So you can go to the second track and you can actually read the book with the Kupik words, and children can have fun learning to speak some Kupik words, which of course you wouldn't have the opportunity anywhere else.
Right. And this is a delightfully charming story about a little girl. And what I like about the book and like about your books is that you're not doing a John sees Jane walking down the street. That just irritates me no end because children are intelligent. And I can remember when I came out with my award-winning children's book, people saying, oh, this is too sophisticated for 3 and 4-year-olds. And I thought, wait, where are you people coming from? What planet are you on, for heaven's sake?
Mm-hmm.
Kids are smart. And maybe at 3, they may or may not have the vocal articulation. But believe me, I've seen it firsthand. I've experienced it firsthand. They understand beautifully. And when you don't talk down to them, then their skills become refined much more quickly. And that's what I like about your material. And with Nooni, this is a story about a little girl who's given a special doll. And this doll is made by members of her family. And then it disappears. And then there's this wonderful adventure she goes through where she has talking animals. She can communicate with them. And how the doll is rescued. And the wonderful gifts that are exchanged by family, between the animals and Noonie. So this is a very, very significant book. And again, I really appreciate the fact through the publications that you have done. And you have the workbooks that will enable the children to work with the teachers with Noonie. I just think this is fabulous. I know the kids are just going to be thrilled. I hope you have someone that's doing a video of what you're going to have up there in Noonie, because on Nunavak Island, you will just absolutely be thrilled with the response. Let's go on to the other book, because you have Louis the Lemur, and then you have Vultures in the Cemetery. Now, Louis is, and again, you're not talking down to the kids, but you've done something that's really a lot of fun that kids like, because with Louis the Lemur's Adventures, this first book, there's the Ungel words, and you have the Ungel dictionary that's at the back of the book. So if you don't understand the words, obviously you go back into the dictionary at the back of the book. This really is going to be fun for young people, because there will be that different language that the animals are using. You have Komodo the dragon, you have Sir Gussie, the caretaker of the Ungels, you have the uprights, you have Cleese, you have Lo, you have Mappy and Pappy, lemur parents. To these characters, when you were putting them together, because I know we have listeners that love to write that maybe would like to publish their own, how did you put these characters together? What was the stimulus for Louis the Lemur and these adventure series that you are developing?
Well, there was two forms of stimulus about Louis for me. One was that I had seen John Cleese's. He's an actor and British comedian. He's been in a lot of movies, The Fish Called Wanda, for example, some of those things. And he has a passion for lemurs because they are perishing. So I got interested then when I saw some of his TV documentaries. But then I had an opportunity in the UK to go to a lemur preserve. It's called Cricket St. Thomas. It's actually an animal preserve in the UK. And I started talking to the lemur keeper, and then I began talking to some of the administration. One thing led to another. I made a number of visits. I was allowed in with the lemurs. One jumped off my head and on my shoulders, and really got to interact with these incredible creatures. So I wanted to write about a lemur. But then I got to thinking, this animal world needs to have voice. So we need to give voice to the animals, and I wanted to work with endangered animals so that the children could understand what is happening, because they hear all of this about there's endangered animals and things, but I wanted them to have a personal relationship. So there is Komodo the dragon, as you said, who comes from the Comoro Islands. There's Louis, who comes from Madagascar. Ulo, the red-billed hanging parrot, is an endangered bird also from the Comoro Islands in Indonesia. And Sir Gussie, who looks after all of these animals that are endangered, he, being the caretaker of the animals, he is from the Galapagos Islands. Well, I did this on purpose because I wanted the children to take a look at the world in a global aspect. So there is a series of 9 books. Now, these books will be scaffolded, which means this one is a little bit thinner, a little bit shorter, and as these 9 books evolve, they're going to get thicker, they're going to have more vocabulary. They do have black line drawings. My artist is fabulous. She's from, Anita Saunders is also from the UK. She does wonderful animals, and the children get to use their imagination, but we help it along just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Then we made it in pocket size, so it's like a pocketbook size, so that if we have some children who are a bit older but they're weak readers, like me who couldn't read, mm-hmm. they're not going to be so embarrassed to have a little bit simpler book, even if they're perhaps in middle school. They could still walk around with pride with Louis the Lemur Adventures, and because the books are scaffolded, each one will push the child up. then, of course, as you said, it has a dictionary. That was a sneaky way of me getting children used to dictionaries because I hated dictionaries. They never made sense to me. You'd look up a word, and then you didn't even understand the meaning. So I thought this is a good way to get children beginning in a chapter book. There's only 5 chapters, but it is a chapter book, and it has the dictionary, the glossary, and they can learn this new language. And then in the lesson guides, I actually have them do writing projects, and they make up their own language. I also wanted them to understand that you can understand content that you're reading even if you don't know a few words. You can still figure it out by reading the sentence. So there's a lot of very sneaky, brain-based learning little things that I have interjected into my material through my experience as both a teacher and a trainer of teachers and a person who has studied reading programs and how children learn how to read. So, like I say, I'm just sneaking up on the kids with these books.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've got one thing in here that every time I look at it, I go, I don't even know how I'm going to wrap my mouth around it. And it is the 58 letter combinations for a village's name, which is a site. And I'm thinking, and I've got the dictionary right open in front of me here right now. And I'm going, Leon, Vera, Pool, Gungil, Guthrie, Ukrainer, Dob, oh, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, yeah, right. And I bet you some 10-year-old could say, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to go be totally embarrassed if ever I did it with them. But this is, how did you ever find out about this village? Vaguely in my memory file, I remember reading something about it. It is the longest village name in the world, and its translation is the Church of St. Mary in the Hollow of White Hazel Trees near the Rapid Whirlpool by St. the Silos of the Red Cave. Good grief. They really wanted to be remembered, didn't they?
My animal smugglers. There are 11 longest names in the world of places, and my animal smugglers are going to go to 9 of those longest places. So every book will have a Landfare word in it.
Uh-huh.
And my narrator, because he speaks Welsh, he rattles off the end of his tongue. And kids are going to learn to use this just like we did supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Right.
Kids, my dream is that kids are going to take the 9 longest names that we use. And in the 9th book, by the way, all of these animals wrap up their adventure. The animal smugglers get captured by 2 wonderful men who get together, one detective from England and one detective from the United States. And I have these 2 detectives that will be introduced in the next book. One is patterned after one of my children who is a law enforcement officer, and the other detective who will help find these animals is an acquaintance we have in England, and he was with Scotland Yard. So there's going to be a mystery that evolves, and each time these smugglers are going to end up in one of these 9 longest places until they finally capture them at the end, and I'm not going to reveal where they're going to find them, and it is also one of the 11 longest names in the world. So I don't know. I'm kind of a puzzle person, and I have, you can tell by my books, I've got a lot going on in my head. I live in a cartoon world where animals talk.
Well, I can empathize. I
just
really
love
can.
It.
Now, let's go with the time remaining. The last book is Vultures in the Cemetery, and this is really a charming book. And, of course, I'm being in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. We love our squirrels, mm-hmm. and you have a beautiful squirrel in here. And I wouldn't agree with you that the vultures are cute. I don't, I look at them and I go, uh-huh, yeah, right. But anyway, I think they're phenomenal animals. I really, really do. But this little squirrel, it's so typical. You have really captured what happens with children. Heavens, it happens enough with adults. But
yes.
With children, how this little squirrel makes a judgment about vultures. And they're not pretty
yep.
to look at. I mean, they are ugly. So he makes statements, and it hurts a vulture's feelings. And then Mama has a plan where she's going to teach her little squirrel better manners, because he needs to understand that everything has its place and that somebody may not look as pretty as you or may not fit your description, but you need to learn about them. And so Mama has some lessons. We mamas do a good job that way. We work together. We have what's called teamwork. We get everybody involved on it. And then we don't tell our victims, which is what happens to this little squirrel. But you've got foxes in here. You've got an adorable pictures. I mean, the artistry is just wonderful, but this mischievous little squirrel. He reminds me of my Scottish Terrier. If they could talk to each other, they would just do great. And it's, you know, and Mama Chipmunk that has to just keep the secret. One day when that little squirrel has squirrel babies of its own, she probably will tell him the truth about what she did to set him up. But anyhow, there's so much. This is just an adorable book. But you are conveying through the gift of story and illustration wonderful lessons for the children to absorb. And this could be for a multicultural level, which I really like. In today's world, because we have so much interaction with various cultures on different, you know, different from different environments and different places in this planet, when materials like this can be shared, sometimes children may never have known about a vulture. They have no way of knowing. So teacher has a way of saying, let's look up a vulture. Let's go check out something from the library. Let's find out about them. And like you said, you introduce history. You introduce science. You talk about endangered species. Some vultures are not endangered. Others are seriously endangered. And the kids want to know why. What's happened? So this enables a child through reading to enjoy exploration, to enjoy using their imagination, to enjoy the fact that they can read, and that because they can read, they can think. And then when they can think, they can make choices. If they can't read, they're not going to be in the positioning of having choices. When you look at early American history, and my goodness, for how many millions of people around this planet who cannot read, they have to sign a name with an X. Early American history, you know, you have people that maybe either made a sign of a cross or an X. They didn't even know what they were signing. They hadn't a clue. They were just trusting that somebody was going to do right by them, and usually they didn't. So this is so significant to bring the love of reading together. Now, you have a website, and that website is pennyrich.com, and that's P-E-N-N-I-E, rich, R-I-C-H.com. And you're going to have all kinds of information there. I know we're getting close to being out of time, PJ. When you look at this, you obviously have your projects lined up in front of you, and I'm sure it's just a joy to get into them, because I know how it is when I'm writing and how I feel about it. You go into that wonderful world that you bring to life with children. When you do this, what do you look at as the bigger picture? What is your big I want to achieve with these projects?
The bigger picture for me is the passion that I have for children, literacy, and for our world as a whole. And I think if children can learn life skills such as reading, I know that it opened up the world for me, as you said in the beginning. I want children to be able to have the world at their fingertips. I want them to be informed citizens, responsible people to themselves and the world around them. So when I sit down and write my books, I always want to make sure that the books are teaching not just literacy but life skills, so that we can find a way to live in harmony with each other, and we can find a way to live in harmony with the world around us. It's a pretty big dream, but I believe that we all can work collaboratively and we can make those kinds of dreams happen. We can stop bullying. We can stop fighting. I saw ways of being able to do that in my schools. So that's what I really want to do. I want to make an impact on children and how they view life and themselves.
Well, there you've got it. PJ Nichols, thank you for being my guest today. I wish you continued success. I just think what you're accomplishing is phenomenal, and it's a pleasure having you on the show. For those of you listening, if you have a passion that you want to pass on to children for reading, then do go to her site, pennyrich.com. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you for being my guest again, PJ. We are taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, and we are going to be saying, give us a call. That's right. You can give me a call, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Here is the toll-free telephone number. It's good worldwide. The number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. 9756. Now, when you call in, all you need to do is give me your first name or your initial. And of course, I would just love to know what part of the country you're calling from or even the world. And then after that, sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive. And then you can ask me a question about anything that you might be interested in. Also, if you have a question regarding the paranormal or anything that is of concern to you that you would just like to see if I can help you with it, well, I'm here for that too. So give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, I do want to let you know, those of you that are in Western Washington, that I'm going to be doing a special appearance at the Boeing Parapsychology Expo that is going to be coming up on September 26th. It is going to be held at the Kent Commons and in Kent, Washington, and this is a semi-annual event, and I wasn't able to participate in spring because I had another commitment, but I am able to do this one on the 26th of September. That's a Saturday. So in my newsletter And starting as of the 1st of September, I'll have all of the details for you so that you will know exactly where it is, the hours, and I'll be speaking that day. I also will be doing many consultations for people, and I'm going to have lots and lots and lots of books. So you're going to have an opportunity to get some of those. And meanwhile, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Well, inasmuch as we were talking with a teacher, PJ, today and discussing how important reading was, I wanted to mention a woman. Her name is Marty McGarry, and she is in Port Washington, Wisconsin. I just love to share stories about people that start off with a project having honestly no clue as to what it takes to get it done. And they find in the process of doing, it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, Marty McGarry wanted to build a playground for children that had special needs. And she knew that there were a lot of people in her community that would be very interested in helping make the project happen. But there were over 2,000 people, in fact, 2,800 people, that would end up participating in this project. Now, she didn't have a clue that this is what was going to be the total sum of involved individuals, which, by the way, was a third of the population of that town. But her vision, she started off really feeling that these children needed an area where they could play. Because when children play, they learn. They're not unlike the creatures out in the wild, that through the playing, they learn how to cope with life. Now, she'd been involved with teaching for 28 years, but she had seen so many children that could not be participants because of the way playgrounds were structured, and hers were of special needs. So she started doing some homework. She was just curious. She wanted to find out about equipment the children could play with and different design firms. And there came a time when there was a chunk of land that became available. And the city council had agreed to designate a portion of this property for a playground. And she approached them about giving her the opportunity to build this special playground, and they said, sure. So what she did, she went to the kids and said, I want you to put together a wish list. And she had to laugh, because almost every one of the kids said as part of the playground they wanted to have a pirate ship. You never know with kids. So she said, all right, I want to find out what other teachers feel about this and what they feel the needs would be. So she had a friend, her name was Sue, who her son had Down syndrome. She said, neither one of us, though we're teachers, are really good at math. So when we started looking at the cost for everything and the sum came to $450,000 for this playground, she said, that didn't sound like a lot of money to us. Well, what's $450,000? So that was the initial estimate. Now, the Kiwanis Club chapter in her community, they raised funds for her, and the first batch of money that came through was $7,000. She said then the word got out in the town. There was a woman in town that gave $25,000. Her company matched that $25,000, so now we have $50,000 from one person. And other businesses started chipping in. Then they decided they wanted to build a picket fence, and families were buying the pickets in the picket fence for $30 a piece. They bought bricks for the walkways. The bricks went for $50 to $750 each. They held silent auctions, T-shirt sales, a coin drive, and a run, rock, walk, and roll-a-thon. Try to say that fast 5 times. And then there was a local family foundation that offered to donate half of the remaining $170,000 balance if Miss McGarry could raise the rest. Well, What they found is, in raising the $450,000, that covered the materials. But there was another cost they didn't know about. Mm-hmm. Guess what that was? Labor. The actual construction, the labor, was going to cost an additional $900,000. Does that sort of make you sweat a little bit? Well, those were the facts. The whole community decided they were going to get involved. They selected a design firm, sent, and the firm had a 164-page how-to binder put together, and all Ms. McGarry needed was 500 volunteers to work 6 12-hour days. Piece of cake. Mm-hmm. So in September, on the 16th, 2008, that was the first day of construction. Two women heard about the project from a DJ on the way to work and took a day off to help. There was a couple who was in their 80s. They took care of maintaining the tool trailer. 10-year-olds came out, sanded and stacked. They were out there helping. She said it was absolutely amazing. So many people within the community, this was important to them. And she said this was significant because they had a piece of making it happen. And only three people, they called them the building captains, were paid. All of the volunteers with experience in building became coordinators, those who could operate power tools. They had a separate group of their own. And then they had the runners, those that could do whatever was necessary for errands. And there was a team that served meals for the workers from local restaurants that were donated by them and also various churches and other organized, you know, activities. They were just going a mile a minute. Now, the playground is called the Possibility Playground. Possibility Playground. You go to possibilityplayground.org. And it is now one of the most popular destinations in Ozaukee County. And it is amazing. It is the length of a football field. It sits on a bluff overlooking Lake Michigan. They've got a giant rocking pirate ship, a lighthouse, a rock climbing wall, all kinds of rings high and low, monkey bars, palm drums, sandboxes, swings, slides, bridges, and lots and lots and lots of ramps for those children in wheelchairs. The children, whether they're handicapped or not, they're all out there playing. And here she said, this children, everything is available to everyone. There's no special designated area. It's for everybody to enjoy. And she said, people used to ask her, why in the world do you want to build a playground just for children with disabilities? She said, they didn't get it. They just don't understand it. It's only when you build a playground for children with disabilities that you build one for all children. Hats off to a very, very special lady, Marty McGarry, and the phenomenal group of people in her community that made something that started off for $450,000, expanded an additional $900,000, and it's being enjoyed today. It's just exciting. If it isn't exciting, I don't know what can be. Just shows you how one person with a vision can make that vision a reality in a very, very special way. Donna Sebo here. Hey, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I'll light up your life with a little bit of insight. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with William Anderson. And we're going to be finding out the Anderson Method. How can you empower yourself? Well, William Anderson, be able to tell us exactly that. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. in the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. There is so much change that's occurring in the health industry, and it's occurring because we as consumers are walking with our dollars to alternative methods of wellness. And a lot of us are saying, I am going to take personal responsibility for myself. I am going to make sure that I examine whatever options might be available to me so that I can enjoy good health, so that wellness is going to be a standard in my life. And all of us are very unique as individuals. Some of us may do very well if, you know, we eat pasta, a whole bunch of pasta. Others may not have, you know, their bodies just may not deal well with that. Same thing can be with certain fruits and vegetables and all kinds of things when it comes to good nutrition. So many times we have to experiment, but it always is helpful, I think, to have little tips of information that can be shared that will enable you perhaps to try something to make you feel better. In our world today, we have so many chemicals that have been designed, and some of them, and many of them in fact, have proven to be not such hot stuff. Well, we can get all agitated about it, and we can get all upset, but we also can start educating ourselves and start reading. And I have the good fortune where I have all kinds of materials that cross my desk that enable me to see things in a different way that maybe a lot of you wouldn't have the opportunity to see. So I encourage you to keep your mind and your attitudes open. But there are many things that are in nature that can enhance us. And there's a lot of things that come through food that if you have it, for example, if you have problems with digestion, one of the best fruits you could ever eat is a papaya. Well, maybe in your part of the world, you don't get papaya. And if you do get it, it's so green, you have to obviously allow it to ripen. But papaya, if you do your homework on it, has so many wonderful enzymes. And if you've got digestive problems, having the fruit is just wonderful if you can get it and allow it to ripen in its own natural way. But if that's not the case, you can go to your health food store, and there are papaya enzymes. And there are many things, when you become educated about it, you realize that you can add to your diet, things that you can do for yourself that encourage, again, balance for your body. But on the other hand, you have to figure out what doesn't work for you. I've got a friend, she loves tomatoes, and she said, oh, Donna, there's so much good nutrition in tomatoes, but I can only have them occasionally because my system does not handle the acids in the tomato very well. And she breaks out in this rash when she has too many of them. And it goes away. But she's learned about her own body. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to pay attention to our body. Well, Lots of times, people, when they're traveling, they may get air sick, or they might get car sick, or, you know, if they are going to be climbing, maybe they find that they get nauseous. Well, ginger is a natural food that you can take, and you can check at your health food store, but fresh ginger really is very, very good. And why? It's got a component in it called gingerol. And it helps if you're experiencing nausea. And, you know, usually the upset stomach goes along with it. It allows the body to settle down. And what you do, you drink, you put a little bit of ginger in hot water, let it steep for a few minutes, and then you sip it. And those, it's just, you know, doesn't, you don't make it real, real strong, but it'll soothe it. I found that for me, peppermint tea works very well that way. In fact, if I've gone out and I've had a very nice dinner, usually for me, I don't have a real heavy meal in the evenings. So once in a while, you know, you have these occasions where you go out and maybe you have a special occasion and you go, oh, I just feel so full and my stomach just feels so uncomfortable. Maybe you eat more than you should. Well, if you have a cup of peppermint tea, that helps to calm the tummy down. And with ginger, you can use it in cooking, you know, in Asian foods. It's a wonderful, wonderful seasoning. But you can also check at your health food store and find out about ginger in capsule form. And then there's, you know, psyllium for elimination for the body. This is something that a client of mine taught me many years ago. She was in her 80s when I met her, and she said she used to have a terrible time because she had this very irregular schedule. She was flying. She was a salesperson. She was on the road, erratic foods, and she said, oh, I would just, my body would just get so miserable. And she said, finally, someone gave her a recipe for a mucilin. And I'll share it with you on the air because it's a wonderful recipe. I know I put it in one of my newsletters. I don't remember which one, but it's in one of my newsletters. And it is comprised of seeds. And she said she would take these seeds and put them in a juice and allow it to soak. And she'd find that the seeds just swelled and swelled and swelled. And so she would have a cup of this, not a cup, I have a quarter of a cup of this seed mixture every morning for breakfast. And she said I'd use apple juice or I'd use orange juice. And she said, I never, ever have had a problem since. It's just automatic. She even took it with her when she traveled. She said she never had a problem after that. And she always felt good because even though her schedule was erratic, her body had that regularity she needed. When it comes to something regarding, you know, being calm if you are just very restless, you're very agitated, there is an herb called valerian, and it has phytochemicals in it, and it is not habit-forming, and it's a perennial. And what they've discovered in their research is that valerian is very much like the commercially made Valium. They did a two-week study of 100 people saying it was just as good as the chemical Valium, Valium, was just as good as that, valerian, excuse me, was just as good as Valium at easing anxiety without having to worry about being drowsy or dizzy or being lightheaded and some other side effects that people go through. So if you are wanting to improve your life, don't be afraid to explore. There are so many wonderful sources of information by reputable people, and we'll be having some of those medical professionals on this show. And if you want to learn more about them, just, you know, check things out on your own. Go ahead and research. Read. Be open to learning. Life is wonderful with opportunities. And when you can explore, who knows, you may not just be helping yourself, but you're going to be helping other people as well. Literacy, we were talking about it earlier. No matter what your age, you can be a good reader. If you don't feel you are a good reader, just know it takes a little bit of time, a little bit of practice, and you can be there. And it can be a pleasurable experience for you, opening you up to a world that is just infinite with possibilities. Donna Sebo here. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take charge and full steam ahead. It's a good day to be alive. Be here tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.